Well, folks, this is a real treat. That my guest coming on the podcast today, Jordan Klepper, is a comedian. He's an Emmy nominee and a quick-witted street interviewer for The Daily Show. He makes me laugh. He makes me cry. He makes me worried because he has a way of exposing sometimes who we really are as he talks to our fellow Americans about the issues of the day. His interviews with Trump supporters, conspiracy theorists, and anti-vaxxers always goes viral. And it not only shows our humanity, but it also shows the underlying comedy of it all, you know, how we need to kind of laugh at ourselves from time to time. He hosts the podcast Kasich and Klepper, along with former Governor John Kasich, as well as a new podcast coming online, Fingers the Conspiracy, which should be very interesting. I like the name, I think. Anyway, Jordan Klepper will be with us in a great conversation right after this. Well, folks, as I said in the intro, this brother makes me smile. He makes me cry. He makes me worry because he exposes so much about us that, you know, just makes it, that keeps it real. Just a real treat to have Jordan Klepper in the house.
Well,
conversation.
Michael, I'm glad I can make you feel all the things. If I can take you on a roller coaster ride of human emotions, I will do it.
You do it. You do it. You do it. I love your work on Comedy Central. I love the guys over there and the work that you do. I have been a victim of it many times. So
sure.
I know it well. My Muppet and I have spent countless hours regaling ourselves about our days.
Is that what you do? You sit in your office and talk to your Muppet? Is that?
I do. Yeah. I do. I think most men do, actually, but it's, you know, it's what we do.
We just need somebody to listen to our stories.
That's it, because no one does otherwise.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, it's just us in the room alone late at night.
This is what this podcast is for. We just really uncover what is going on inside the mind and the emotional minefield of Michael Steele.
It's what you do. Mm-hmm. And so let's get into what you do. You have a way of engaging conversation that is authentic. People genuinely tell you how they feel and what they think. And I think what makes it work, Jordan, is, and unlike what other people do who have more of a mocking attitude, although you do sometimes, you do on occasion go, really? but people don't walk away thinking they got used or made fun of. You're genuinely interested. Okay, tell me why you are so batshit crazy. And they do. What is your secret? How does that work? How does that, when you walk into that crowd that you know arguably would be hostile in some form, you kind of dissolve it and it goes away and people are like, hey, yeah, let me tell you why I'm a Trump guy, or let me tell you why January 6th was nothing more than, you know, a walk in the park.
Well, I mean, I think, first of all, thank you for that. But I would say it might be a couple different things. I do think perhaps it's a Midwestern amiability that I'm out in the middle of the road and can talk to folks. You know, I come from Michigan. I have family members on all sides of the political spectrum, and we have a lot of these conversations. Part two, people want to talk. They want to share.
They do.
We live in a culture right now where everybody's inundated with so much news, and they have their own perspectives that they want somebody to listen to. But another part of it, too, that shouldn't be overlooked, as pointed out by my boss Trevor Noah often, is that I'm a big, tall, white guy who walks into these spaces, and there is.
So you're safe.
I'm safe.
He's one of us. At the end of the day, the only thing that matters is his whiteness.
This is one of the under talked about privileges of white privilege. There is you get to go to MAGA rallies and really have lovely long conversations.
My ass showed up.
You're not gonna. Well, you see what the. It's interesting the. the bars, where they become suspect at these events. These events that I go to, traditionally a Trump rally, I go to other events too, but if you walk into a rally like that, the thing that makes me most suspicious is the camera that's behind me. And anybody carrying a camera in there is often fake news or the enemy of the people. And so I would probably, being from Comedy Central or Viacom or Paramount Plus, all these conglomerates that I come and speak to, they're more willing to talk to me than if I was from, say, CNN. I think that would be a harder barrier for me to get over. But being sort of an amiable person who is open to talk, doesn't appear outwardly to be challenging their expectations. People are pretty open to listen.
Is that your objective? What is your objective when you go in? Because I've got a couple of clips I want to play to illustrate not only what's really out there in the ether, but your style and how you sort of help people come into their own. So what is your objective when you frame out, okay, Trump's got a rally next Thursday in Kansas. They expect how many people, everybody's going to be in red MAGA. It's going to be the thing. How do you process your process to go in there and get the goods?
I mean, I think in a nutshell, we're fingering the pulse. I want to know really what are people talking about at these events? Because when you go to these events, Donald Trump plays to the crowd and he is feeding off the crowd. He's giving the crowd what they want. And sadly, that could be something that doesn't matter. It's just fruitless, but it's also the crowd that other prominent Republicans are trying to feed off of as well. And so we are always curious, what are the conversations? Where are they? What is sticking? Because we only are getting, we're here in New York, we're only getting what we're reading in the news. If there was an event next week, what we would essentially be doing is we would be trying to figure out what the story of the week is, what the questions we have about how people are feeling, and then go and try to answer those questions. When the January 6th hearings were going on a month back, the narrative in the news was, the question in the news was whether this was getting through to the other side. And so literally, that's what we prepped for. We don't know. Are people watching? Are they listening? Let's literally go there, ask them, and bring clips of the hearings and have them in real time react to it.
Well, I'm glad you went, let's go there to January 6th, because you did back on the anniversary of January 6th, and I want to make sure I get it all set up just right. You took the time to sort of go back and sort of get a sense of what that was like. So you come to DC for that 1 year anniversary of January 6th. You interview people this was at the Candlelight Vigil.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing you need to understand, folks, that this wasn't a candlelight vigil for the police officers who had died and those who were injured. It was, in fact, a candlelight vigil for, quote, the patriots whose rights are being taken away and who are now in prison for storming the castle. And you, in that moment, pulled up these kernels, these little nuggets of insight.
What would you call the events of January 6th?
A wonderful, glorious event. People were excited that day.
January 6th was the greatest day of my entire life.
Okay. And you're obviously not a police officer.
There was no insurrection that day. If there was any intention on our part, we would have been actually freaking armed.
If there was intention, people would come with
we would have been.
With zip ties or bear spray or a pitchfork.
Felt fits.
What about the people who did come with zip ties, bear spray, and pitchforks?
Well, those weren't arms. Those were just minimal defensive measures.
Who is the candlelight vigil for?
All of the patriots.
All of the 140 patriots, the police officers who were injured that day?
Yeah.
So it's for the police officers?
No, it's not for that. This is for the patriots that are in prison.
The people arrested for injuring the police officers that day.
It was some people standing up to say, stop the steal.
We're here at the site of where the January 6th protesters are being detained. This is a vigil for them. Their rights have been taken away.
So criminal justice is obviously a big issue for you.
I'm interested in protecting everyone's rights.
Are you going to Rikers Island to protest the 15 people who died last year?
I am not.
I'm not. So there's a lot to unpack in that, because I think what we see, and again, that's a montage of your interviews. What strikes me about your style and how you approach the conversation is they will say something, about, people carrying weapons, and you will then follow back up and apply that the way normal people would see it, as opposed to the way they're seeing it. And it is interesting how they then rationalize the argument that they're making or the position that they take. How do you stay calm? How do you stay collected? How? Because I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? It's bear claws, and what are you talking about? And why don't you see that I'm holding the mirror to you, and you actually see yourself? You don't see yourself. They see something else.
Well, I mean, I think you're spot on there. And they're putting out a point of view that essentially would then imply a worldview, that if you fill that worldview out, it's now hypocritical to the point of view they just shared. In some ways, hypocrisy is dead. I think in the old school Daily Show, we used to talk about going out there, you would find a hypocritical moment. And I think that was perhaps 7 years ago, where people would realize that they're contradicting their own points of views, and that in and of itself might cause shame or embarrassment.
Right.
We are way past that. I think we can, and a lot of the people we talk to don't see inherent contradiction, or if they do, they don't see that at all as an issue or a problem. And so that's often, what we talk about before I go out there, and you ask how I stay calm out there. I go out prepped. I essentially have debate prep before I walk out into the field.
Right.
I work with a producer. We'll talk on the flight beforehand. We'll just bat around some of the stuff in the news. And it's not overly formal, but it's kind of like, people are talking about this. This is what I think is ironic about this. This is what I think is curious about this side of it all. This is what I have no idea what people are talking about here. I walk out there, and I am genuinely curious as to where the line is now. And so the secret to all these things is listening. Listen,
yes.
Pay attention, be curious. You'd be surprised how many folks are not actually listening out there.
I'd say about 90% of them aren't actually listening.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, everybody is so used to talking past one another. Yeah. And also the people I'm talking to are used to echoing the things that they're seeing on television. They're echoing the things that perhaps Donald Trump has said or their favorite pundit has said. But something that never happens with Donald Trump is he rarely gets follow-ups. He rarely is pushed to justify that point of view that might be hypocritical. These folks then take and adopt a lot of these points of view, but they haven't thought through that second step.
Well, they've done the same thing Trump has done.
Yeah.
I mean, there is no follow-up, so there's no expectation that you will have a follow-up. And if there is one, you just rinse and repeat, what was said. And that in that clip we just heard, when you pointed out to the gentleman, you're here, for the police officers. At first, he's like, no, we're not here for the police officers. Mm-hmm. We're here. And in the part of his brain, one can only think, or I guess hope, that in a rational world where Trump has not infected the body politic or the way we approach these things culturally, et cetera, that he would 140 police officers were under siege that day. Some have died because of this. And we're here for that. But I'm actually here for the 140 people who were put in jail for, creating insurrection. And it's because of that disconnect that you have this kind of other world, people, Earth 2, Earth 7 kind of environment that you find yourself in.
I mean, I think that is, if dissecting that little moment, I think you're spot on. You can see his gut. A month ago, they were talking about, he I'm sure was arguing pro-police rhetoric. If somebody talked about defunding the police, he would talk about, it's our goal. Of course, protect the police, back the blue. Hell, I got a sticker on the back of my car.
Yeah.
That might have been 2 days previous, he was arguing that. And so when I ask him that question, he's got yesterday's talking points right there. And I don't doubt he believes part of that. But you see that moment where it's like, oh, shit, no. I think the opposite now, because I was told to think the opposite.
I was told to think the opposite. So that for me is, as someone who's been in this space a long time, dealt with it, dealt with a lot of this at a lot of levels, different levels. That aspect of, for me, when I was national chairman, even with county and state chairman, for me, it was always important to be very clear about what we were trying to do. We wanted the talking points, right, to be consistent and to be some rational and to be something that if you ran into a Jordan Klepper, you could arguably defend, right?
Mm-hmm.
To your, I think, point that I don't want to really skip past, because this is where the I have a problem with the media. Because I watched them up close and personal for a number of years, bait Trump and serve him the fish on the golden platter, wipe the golden toilet for him, do the things that they ordinarily wouldn't do, that gave him license or at least a belief that he could pretty much say whatever the hell he wanted and no one would challenge him. Mm-hmm. That's why when he goes up, when he said initially, I could shoot someone on Fifth Avenue and wouldn't get in trouble for him, the response back would be, no, your ass would go to jail. You prepared to go to jail? You're telling me you're above the law? If you had that conversation on the front end, we wouldn't be struggling with it on the back end. Now with his and a lot of his believers, and I didn't say supporters because they are believers, thinking he is above the law. And is how the media and others have not pushed back against this consistent drumbeat of lies and disinformation. And because it, you know, it's good clickbait, it's good advertising bait, et cetera.
Well, I mean, I think, well, one, you're right. I think the one foundational belief where these folks I'm talking to are not hypocritical is the party's talking points are not consistent with law and order or what have you. The one right. consistent talking point is us versus them. And so when you ask him what he thinks about this issue, he doesn't think about it in terms of law enforcement, about perhaps right or wrong, about traditional conservative values. It's what are they saying? I'm against that. And how do I support that? And so I feel like that is always consistent. And they're remarkably strong at keeping that consistency. When you look at the media, I do think the thing that frustrates me, I've been obsessed with the 1985 book, Amusing Ourselves to Death. And I do think it speaks to the idea, it's no giant secret, but I think the medium of media today has created these oversimplified fear-mongering discussions. And so what I get really worried about is I don't see where more of moderation can exist as a form of conversation. You know, the problem, sure, I could point to Fox News and tell you all the things I have an issue with. I could point to CNN and I'd say all the issues
MSNBC
with.
Where I
could point to MSNBC.
They got
issues. The big issue is it's a 24-hour news cycle that has to sell advertisements, that has to look at numbers, and it's all about getting eyeballs. It's about shortening information so that people want to click and watch. I'm in TV. I'm in show business. How I stay on is people share clips of mine online. If enough people do it, I continue to have my job. And now we're in this ecosystem here where the only conversation that rises are somebody who is as entertaining as Donald Trump. And when the media becomes show business, then Donald Trump wins. And the only thing that can beat Donald Trump is fear around that. And that is where I get so worried about it, where it's I want the media to be better at covering this. And I think they've given Trump way too much leeway to create this. But I think it's the system altogether that is going to only feed that. And it's not going to be one network that figures out a better hard line, because that network eventually has to throw to a commercial and then look at its ratings. And guess what? I think I know what Americans want.
Yeah. Well, and you know, there is value to that. Again, if to your point, from a journalism side, you hold the line and you do your part in steering the news, the information in the direction of democracy. It is the only institution that's actually mentioned in the Constitution, right?
Mm-hmm.
They don't mention governors and lieutenant governors like me. They don't mention party officials. They don't mention, you know, all these other players, you know, consultants. And so they mention the media, they mention journalists, they mention the role of a free press. And there, so that, to your point, I think it's very important for them to keep that in the forefront that, yeah, it's okay to challenge Trump. It's just like right now, Jordan, you know, all these folks are running around gnashing their teeth and wringing their hands, worried about, oh my God, you know, if the DOJ prosecutes Trump, and then you got Lindsey crazy as hell Graham out there talking about, well, there'll be blood in the streets if, you know, they bring. And instead of people just recognizing, dude, we're here because this mofo did this to himself. He took the boxes of secret documents to Mar-a-Lago. You didn't pack them up, Jordan. I didn't pack them up. I mean, his chief of staff didn't pack them up. This son of a bitch packed them up himself. In fact, directed and orchestrated the move. So when the National Archives said, can we have our paper back? And he's like, no. And they're like, no, you really don't own those. And he's like, no, I declassified everything at 1155. No, it doesn't work like that. And yet we wring our hands at the prospect of the institution doing what it would do to him, that they would do to you and me. If when I left Annapolis as lieutenant governor, when I left my service in the federal government, if I walked out of either of those places with a bunch of documents I shouldn't have, what the hell do you think I'd be doing right now? I wouldn't be talking to Jordan Klepper, that's for sure. So what is that? What does it say to you as you stand in between these two worlds in the land of MAGA and everything else? And you've got these institutions that are trying to, you know, do right, but then they just seem to be hesitant when it comes up to actually holding Donald Trump accountable, whether it's the media, whether it's the legal system, political system. How do you see that?
Well, I mean, I don't see accountability as a strong suit here in America right now. And so that is, you know, that is not only disappointing, but these institutions that I grew up trusting and believing blindly, you see all the holes across the board.
Right.
When I look at all of this, it all becomes part of this narrative. It all becomes part of what is the stories that we're telling. And I think about the media. I think about the media all the time. And I go out and it's like, we need more, like, if the role of the media, if the role of journalists is to have an informed public, and a working democracy is with an informed public who has the ability to keep to choose who is in charge and has the ability to check powers with information and have information, the media can do a better job. But the folks that I talk to on the road aren't, can find sources anywhere that say exactly what they want them to say. And so we are here talking about this story of what's happening with Donald Trump and accountability. And I think there's still a DOJ who is scared because there's a narrative already of like, oh, actions might come and anger half of this country, so we need to be careful. Of course you have to be cautious, but it's insane.
They're already angry.
I think that's where they're so far behind. This idea that there is like this rationality that can come to half of the country, or that there is a way to communicate. I think my pessimism comes in like, you're not talking to them, and you're not going to. It's not going to be with CNN going a little bit farther to right and having slightly more conservative conversations. No, the folks that I'm talking to at these rallies who would die for Donald Trump, who are helping him craft his narrative, they are going to websites you have never heard of. Right. And those websites are telling them whatever the hell they want to hear. Steve Bannon told you what he's going to do. He's going to flood it with shit. He's going to flood the airwaves with shit. And guess what? We have a problem right now. Modern culture, it's too much information. We can't synthesize anything. There is no depth of thought. There's no depth of conversation. And so nobody knows what is up or down. Truth is a hazy, hazy thing. And when you have bad actors who are like, flood it with shit, because then you can't have any legitimate conversations. And so literally, we can see what happened on January 6th, the most documented crime in the history of humanity. There's never been more cameras on a crime than January 6th. Never. And a day after, 40% of this country was like, it was Antifa. No, it didn't happen. It was a false flag. There wasn't even a coherent argument, but it didn't have to be. It didn't have to be. As long as there was doubt, and we have this system right now where all the information you give gives you all the doubt you need. It makes you an expert in doubt, and suddenly you don't have to jump on board. And that's what scares the hell out of me, because that is so hard to put back together.
Well, you say you actually make an interesting point in an interview you did back in August, I believe it was, where you talked about all of this, you know, particularly the work you're doing is a microcosm of the state that we're in, that what you're seeing and what you're exposing is really kind of like the tip of the iceberg. Because, baby, like that iceberg in the Atlantic, that sucker runs deep. It's a lot bigger than you think it is. And you just made that point. I mean, it's scary.
I think it is scary. I feel like an anthropologist half the time. We approach it looking for humor, but oftentimes we find the American condition, and it's frightening. I think the last one I went to a rally in Madison a couple weeks ago that Trump showed up, and it was the first event he had been to post the Roe v. Wade reversal, and I was very curious to talk abortion. Okay. And almost everybody I talked to before we got to that brought up John F. Kennedy Jr. being alive. Like fringe weird conspiracies, ones that it takes a very creative mind to create. And I think maybe I'll give Americans more credit than they're due. We are a creative bunch, and we come up with the wildest ideas.
We just crazy as hell.
That's one way to twist it, but
creative my ass. I mean, how do you even, at what point along the spectrum of the tragic death of JFK Jr. and that conversation a few weeks ago, did you figure out that tragic accident did not happen? And like Elvis, he is still wandering the earth, waiting his moment to reappear to do what? I mean, this is why I have gin and tonics at 10 o'clock in the morning.
I hear you. Sometimes it's a martini as well. You got to numb the pain. But here's what I totally get about it. I think oftentimes we approach it from the perspective of what I'm watching is our democracy in action. And here is like we assume this is American politics. So why don't they care? And I think the issue is the gamification of American politics. Yeah. Like, yes. You know what's fun? Conspiracies are fun because they make you feel like you're a detective, you're onto something, you know something somebody else doesn't know. Americans have always been drawn to conspiracies. That's like, you know, and I think like— Salem witch trials. And I do think this, side note, I am an agnostic, and I respect religion, and I think it can do a lot for a person. But I've also been in a project where I've been bouncing around. I've been watching live streams of small religious services across America, and batshit stuff happens at these things. I think every week in a lot of places in America, you're going to a place, you are believing a higher power controls the things you do, and you think that angels might save you. And I don't want to be so flip with it, but we're like, how does somebody believe this? We're a culture that is built on weakly believing that something is going to come in and change your life and just believe in that. And then they walk to an event, a giant famous person that they've seen on TV make billions of dollars and look like a hero, tells you that you're a patriot, you're a hero, you're a part of something. So you're like, of course I want to be a part of something. He says, you could wear this cool hat. It's going to make you feel like you're at a college football game. Of course, that's cool. And guess what? You don't have to believe anything you don't want to believe. You could be you could believe in these fun conspiracies, and it makes you a hero. And I think that is compelling. It is fun. When you are bored and have nothing to do, the internet will take you down a hole that will make you so excited and feel important. And I think people are chasing that. And then you have pundits on TV who are like, but this is affecting our culture in this way. And it's like, you have to look, they've never seen politics as something that turns into governing. Politics is a game for them. And I think governing is now just a game. So you talk to people about like, well, what do you actually think about what Donald Trump would do in office? They don't give a shit. They don't think government affects their lives at all. At most, they're contrarian and think it doesn't. I think that's an issue with communication. I don't think we have a grasp right now of what the government, how it affects our lives. Or we've felt so disconnected from that idea that those folks at those rallies are there because, again, the only thing that matters is that they're a part of a community and that their side wins, and that gives them a sense of success and purpose. And so that's why they show up. It's not because they want the roads fixed in their hometown. The roads being fixed in their hometown is just... it's just a talking point they can use to win a battle with somebody that they're fighting with online.
And what they also know is that the roads never get fixed anyway. So no. It doesn't matter. I've driven by that same construction site since I was 10 years old, and the road is never fixed. And that's literally true when I visit New York sometimes. There are some sections of New York that I still get a chance to go to see family, whatever. And they're literally... cones and construction equipment that were there when I was 15.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, did y'all forget to come back and close this hole, or did you just like reopen it, or what's going on? And so that attitude is pervasive. I saw it a lot with the Tea Party, which began not at first around the thing that it ultimately morphed into. It really was around trying to hold our elected officials accountable to the Constitution. Mm-hmm. So on the Republican side, especially, there was, you know, they were sick of the big government Republicanism of the Bush years, spending on war, spending on the economy, money we didn't have. So you had that piece. Then there was, of course, the constitutional role between the executive branch and the legislative branch. You know, the power of an overpowering executive branch. But then that became something else. It became an avatar for something else, just as Trump became an avatar for that.
Mm-hmm.
And the point you made a little bit ago reminds me of a focus group I saw in, must have been September, October of 2016, New Hampshire, white female mother of two divorced. When asked why she supported Donald Trump, her response was, because he's just like me.
Yeah.
In that moment, I turned to my friends and I said, he's won this election. Because if you have elicited that kind of response as a Donald Trump, a guy who is from Queens, New York, billionaire, sits on gold toilets, fondles women, cheats on his wife, and you say he's just like you?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we are fucked.
Yeah.
That's the only way you walk out of that conversation. You go, oh, okay, and we are in some deep shit here, because she just told us something that's not gotten captured in any poll in America.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's been the understory, below the street level narrative, which is why what you do is so enlightening and so, I think, important to better understand exactly how my neighbor thinks and feels.
Mm-hmm.
Because mm-hmm. I think a lot of folks don't recognize, and I say this a lot, I just gave a talk recently and I was asked about this moment, and I said, we are here because this is where you want us to be. People kind of disconnect. They think that the people you interview are someone else. Baby, that's your cousin Susie, who comes to Thanksgiving dinner every year. You know that. You guys mm-hmm. get into big fights, right? So don't sit there and pretend you don't know who this person is. It's a relative, it's a friend. And I think that the quote rest of us try to disconnect from that.
Yes.
Because somehow we know better, when in fact we really don't, because we allow all this stuff to go on anyway. We've allowed it to get to this point. Mm-hmm. We've allowed those folks to begin to feel that way after so many years of being ignored and forgotten by the system.
I mean, I think what is underplayed about that when he first ran was, I think the the point of view that government can do better and we don't need a third term of Barack Obama, essentially, right. I think is a very compelling argument. It's like, are you frustrated? Did we not do enough? Are you not better off? Do you wish you were doing better? You had more attention paid to you? That's always a compelling argument in American politics. And I think Donald Trump, you add no shame to that, where you can play the victim card, but when you can get called out for it being BS, but you never apologize.
Right.
It just only adds to your credit that they're trying to take stuff away from you. It only builds on this myth. And I think that is a very compelling myth. And you're spot on, you know, especially that first campaign going out after the grab by the pussy tape,
right,
and all of that stuff. I was like, I'm going to go to the middle of Christian America and see what they would think. And I remember I would talk to everybody. What was so funny is because the narrative was, it's just locker room talk. It's boys will be boys. It's how they talk. And I talked to everybody, and everybody was like, well, do you talk like that? Do you know anybody who talks like that? Does your husband talk like that? Everybody said, no, 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 no. But we still forgive him. And you're like, you're still connecting to that guy because you don't see the story about him being lewd. You see the story about him being attacked for being lewd. And I
right.
think he's always able to play that victim card. And we are a nation of whiners, and this nation of whiners wants more. We think we deserve more, and we think somebody who can tell us that we should get more, and the fault doesn't lie with ourselves. Heaven forbid we have self-reflection.
Right.
The fault lies in somebody else. That's the narrative that sells. That's the narrative. You think they're paying attention to who's cutting Social Security or that little thing that Lindsey Graham just said? No, they're paying attention to, like, wait, it's somebody else's fault? Yeah, yeah, that's what I believe.
Yeah, yeah,
I believe it's someone else's fault. Yeah, yeah, I'll vote for that.
And it really, and that's really spot on, because when we looked deeper into that focus group, and even the focus group I was at this past week, you see those threads where people have kind of walled themselves off from a certain reality, a certain aspect of reality. Because at the end of the day, Jordan, I don't think they want to confront who they've become or who they've always been. And so our culture and our politics have always shielded us from that. I've known Donald Trump. I've worked with him in the past before he decided to do politics this way. That guy should never have been anywhere near an elective office, let alone the presidency. But what he was able to do was he was very crafty and capable of taking his viewers and turning them into voters, getting them off their duff after Bush, Gore, all of that crazy, Bill Clinton and his crazy. They sat out politics, and this guy comes along and basically said, yeah, it's okay. It's okay to call this crap out. It's okay when you go to a rally and someone is screaming at me to punch him in the mouth, because that's what I would do if I was sitting where you are. Donald Trump ain't hitting nobody. He's a pussy. He ain't gonna hit nobody. Donald Trump is that guy. When the fight starts, he gets in his car and drives off. That's who he is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's standing around going, where's our ride home? Oh, the only ride you're going to get home when the police pick your ass up and take you downtown. He's gone, right? He's gone. So let's all understand what we're talking about. But there is this connection where he becomes their avatar, his reason, their excuse to engage in bad behavior. Because you ask the right question. Ma'am, do you let your husband talk like that? Your husband say, you know, wants to grab you by your private part? Does he come home every night and you know, make that kind of a lewd gesture? Are you okay with your husband having an affair with someone other than his wife? I mean, take Donald Trump's life and apply it to your own. You're going to, especially for, you got to go back and listen to some episodes about evangelicals. So just so what my audience knows what I'm about to say here when it comes to that group. The fakery, the lying to self, and then holding this man up like he's Moses. I can't. Again, gin and tonic, 10 a.m. starts the day. I'm good.
But there's also a part of it where I think this is an oversimplification, but there's all the reasons not to like Donald Trump.
Yeah.
But What he did do that you said, that is, he turned these people out because he lowered the bar of discourse, yes. But he also, like, his rallies are dumb. They're very accessible. They're dumb. Like, and we don't call it out enough. He's dumb. And so he's talking about dumb things. And I think there was a lot of people that didn't want to get into politics because, one, they're not interested. Two, they might not care. But three, it feels like sort of a nerdy thing that they might not be
up
on. You gotta know shit.
You can't talk and out of your ass.
Guess what you don't need to know at a Trump rally? Anything. And so people are, here are people who don't give a shit about politics because all they do care about is wearing like overalls that look like the American flag, a giant hat, and a Trump poster with him on a velociraptor. They're like, that I can do. And not only do they do that, and they're not called clowns, they're called like patriots, heroes. And then they walk into work on Tuesday and they're like, because they skip Monday because they're fucking hungover.
Right.
They walk in on Tuesday and they're like, what are you doing? They're like, oh, politics. I'm a bit of a politics junkie. It's like, no, you're not. You're into cosplay. You love wearing hats and you want to get into a fight at a football stadium. They're like Philadelphia Eagles fans.
Yes.
And so I think there's a lot of hand-wringing where we're like, what is it? But his issues, they don't match up. It's like, it's a dumb event where people think they're suddenly part of politics and then it becomes their identity. And it really does feel like, oh, they're not getting into the nitty gritty. They like the cosplay of it all. It can become their identity. It can become crass. It can feel like just the game that right. it is. And there's no illusion that it actually has to affect the governing portion. It's just the game. And in some ways, it's just such a revelation of what was already behind the system anyway. Just Donald Trump was crass enough to lower the bar so fast, so quick. We got altitude sickness. We went down so quick. Eyes are popping.
Vomiting all over themselves.
But we're like, everybody in, everybody in. Which also makes me laugh. That's always the argument when people are like, Joe Biden, he couldn't have won. I don't see anybody wearing Joe Biden hats or Joe Biden stickers. It's like, yeah, because there's a lot of fucking adults who are at work. They're
right.
doing work. Because I was like, here's
you
the
know it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yes.
What are
you know
talking
what?
About?
I voted twice for Barack Obama. I purchased one hat that I wore, I think, one time. Doesn't mean I didn't support Barack Obama. I liked Barack Obama. I voted for Barack Obama. I didn't feel the need to wear his clothing 24/7.
I got to, before we go to a quick break, I got it. You just reminded me of a moment during the town hall I just did. And very respectful, strong Trump supporters stood up and they made the point that the election was stolen. Okay. It was stolen because Joe Biden didn't get 8 million votes. I don't understand who would vote for Joe Biden. Quote, literally, I don't understand who would vote for Joe Biden. But here was the kicker. You see, Donald Trump had rallies with 25,000, 30,000 people. Biden had rallies from his basement with, you know, he's sitting in his basement. And then when he went out, it was only 500 people showed up. That told me right then this election was stolen when they said that Biden won because he only had 500 people come out to his rallies. It's like you said with the hat. I bought a hat. I wore it once. It was not an indication that I didn't support the candidate in whose name I bought the hat.
Mm-hmm.
As I said to the individuals here, I said, well, that's specious, what you just said. However, as someone who knows firsthand, you can raise a lot of money. And there are a lot of campaigns right now that are raising a lot of money. They're going to outraise their opponents, but they're going to lose the election. I said, because so the size, the number of vote of cash, amount of cash, the number of people at a rally is not necessarily telling you who's going to vote for you. And they didn't get it. It was like I just said, that's what they heard.
I think it's because politics has been, that bar has been lowered so low right now that to so many of those folks, it's a reality. It's watching America's Got Talent. You're like, yes. well, that there weren't 1,000 people cheering for them at the end who called it on the phone. It's like, no, that's just the show. The right. vote, like, it's like, if you were to walk around Brooklyn, I don't think I ever saw a Biden sticker in anywhere in Brooklyn. I talked to a lot of people who really disliked Joe Biden, and I was 100% sure that they voted on voting day for Joe Biden.
Exactly.
And they were very happy. And it was like, because I think, you know, Ta-Nehisi Coates had a great quote about this, where like he was pushed on. He had been critical of Biden in the past on whether or not he would vote for Joe Biden. And I'm cutting this up, but his inherent point was like, of course I'm going to vote for Joe Biden, but my vote for president is not my entire political identity. It's part of my process as being a citizen.
Citizen.
Right. I'm going to be critical. He has the better chance to get some of the things that I think are important, and he will hold those ideals, but that's not the end all of my political activism or my actions altogether. That's an extension of one of my beliefs. And I'm like, yeah, I think it doesn't have to be your identity, but that's the genius of Donald Trump. He's made it people's identities, understand that it's like, oh, but Joe Biden didn't do that on the other side, but maybe that's the new politics.
It is a new politics. We're going to take a quick break before we wrap up with my buddy Jordan Klepper. We'll be back with more right after this.
Retaliation with Julie Roginski is a weekly podcast focused on the stories of women who have spoken truth to power and have faced the consequences. It shares the experiences of the brave women who have sometimes been celebrated, but more often than not castigated for standing up on their own behalf and on behalf of so many others. Each week, I examine the structures, systems, and individuals responsible for perpetuating workplace toxicity that have resulted in propelling the Me Too movement forward. You'll hear stories from music label executives, politicians, police officers, celebrities, and many others as we examine the cultural reevaluations, legal steps, and policy changes that can finally bring an end to the ongoing attack on women in this country and around the world. Listen on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, everybody, to Michael Steele Podcast. We're having a great conversation with Jordan Klepper. So, Jordan, I want to play this. This moment, I think, kind of encapsulates pretty much everything that we've heard over the last not just 4 years of Donald Trump, but the last 30 years of the fight Republicans have with Democrats. And I'll explain a little bit why in a moment, but just take a listen from your conversation with a Trump supporter recently.
Barack Obama had a big part of 9/11.
Which part?
Not being around, always on vacation, never in the office.
Why do you think Barack Obama wasn't in the Oval Office on 9/11?
That I don't know. Would like to get to the bottom of that.
Well, see, then that's exactly the point. That I don't know. Okay, boss, 9/11. September 11, 2001. It is this projection politics. It's Hillary and her emails. Oh, what about all the secret documents that are in the office here and the ones that were balled up and put in the White House toilet? I mean, what about those? It's Barack Obama. Is that the escapism here? That's what it is?
I mean, that's American creativity. That's what I'm fighting for right there. That is somebody.
It's like, what?
And that is one of those examples where we go out there where, you know, we're laughing a little bit of like, because the identity is so strong and because the point of view is they're wrong, this is right, I can make this work. Like, yeah, they will rewrite history in a way to vilify the person who is the villain of the moment. It still blows my mind. Every time I go out, I'm like, yeah, but there has to be a line where we're like, well, I'm not going to bend over backwards for that. But yeah, time gets bent.
It's what you did it there. It's like, it's Barack Obama. It's all because of Barack, what Barack Obama didn't do on 9/11. He wasn't there. He was doing something else. He wasn't paying attention. And you're like, well, do you have an idea why Barack Obama wasn't in the White House? I mean, you were very, I mean, you're trying to give him the triggers. You're trying to say Barack Obama, White House, 9/11, 2001, right? So one of these things is not like the other. Can you figure out which one? And he's like, I don't know. He just doesn't want to work.
But that's, I think the American brain, God, it's been taxed, and our school systems need a lot of that Elon Musk money. So I feel for us, yes. But you can see there's so much information that I'm sure, like, in real time, he's thinking, okay, Barack Obama, bad. 9/11, bad. There's probably something going on with the government. Blame Barack Obama for 9/11. Great. Done. Next. Right. And I think, like, we have so much coming in. We have to sift it really quick where you're like, okay, cool. Okay. Hunter Biden. Okay. Evil. Okay. Right, Biden, right. Evil, bad. Socialist, communist, Hitler. Okay. Put those over in that corner. Yeah. It's just, it's a grab bag of BS. There's too much coming at us too quick.
You are doing, and I want to unpack just for a moment the work you're doing with a buddy of mine, John Kasich, on your podcast, which is, it's kind of interesting. It's very different to have you sort of pair up with John and sort of create this kind of conversation piece, which is really interesting. And how did that come back as Kasich and Klepper? You also have what's the Fingers Conspiracy?
I got a podcast coming out soon for the Daily Show. Jordan Klepper, Fingers the Conspiracy. It's right. Gonna be like it's gonna be a fun podcast where essentially I'm taking some of these ideas that I'm hearing out on the road and then talking to some experts about it to figure out where does this JFK Jr. conspiracy start and what is so obsessive about it. I don't get a chance to follow up in the road that much. And so this is a chance to kind of step back and be like, all right, here's the wild theories that Americans are gravitating to. Let's take a little bit more time and unpack it. So that's a really fun podcast we're working on right now. And the one I'm doing with Kasich has been a joy. We randomly sort of got paired together.
Well, I just let you know, I'm jealous. I'm envious. I am.
You don't need John Kasich calling you at 2 a.m. wanting to just bitch about the last football game or commuting in his Tesla, just wanting to talk about whatever he sees. It's a strong time commitment. I had no idea. This is, governors are busy. Governors,
yes, governors no longer, are busy.
Governors who are no longer governors, less busy. This is what I've realized.
Right. And lieutenant governors, even less so.
Yes, I'm sure.
I just had to put my Bible on the shelf. I'm like, damn, in 4 years, I never got to use it. So what's a brother going to do? You also have a new thing that's coming out. I just caught this. You just really announced it. It's you returns for round two of Shit Show.
Right? Oh,
yes.
That's I'm doing a fun live show in Brooklyn where I, you know, New York is home to so many fun late night comedians. And so
yes,
I've invited some of my friends to kind of do a fun late night news show and then bring some members of the journalist where we had John Heilman on last night, cutting stuff up, trying to get him drunk and saying something inappropriate at a live show. And luckily, you know, we were able to do it.
I was going to say with John, that was not a hard lift.
It turned out to be
not a hard lift.
Much easier than I thought it would be.
Yeah. I would think that was kind of like child's play.
It was really easy. Yeah, I thought it'd be like, oh, how are we going to coax it?
Gotten arrested for abuse after a certain point.
Yeah, he may have arrived already ready. So
yeah, that's exactly the point. One other thing before I let you skip out, man, is you know, we talked a lot, obviously, about what's happening here at home and the impact that your work really does have. We laugh about it and we scratch our heads some. But it does have a profound resonance. And the same is true. You were recently in Hungary and, you know, sort of looking at the same kind of vibe there and in Eastern Europe and other parts of the world around these sort of autocratic leaders like Viktor Orban and others. What's your take there from a global perspective, looking at the sort of, as we have, the microcosm of, you know, MAGA, Trumpism, but then globally, I mean, Italy right now is about to, you know, put in charge their first female president, but she is a right wing hard ass. What do you think is going on there?
Well, I mean, I do think there seems to be a shift. We're seeing more of these autocratic leaders take hold in these countries. And I think for us going over to Hungary, it was, you know, CPAC invited Viktor Orban. There was a lot of talk when we went to CPAC about Hungary being held up as an example of what America could potentially become. Okay. Right. Yeah. And I think, and as a dumb comedian over here, I knew very little about Hungary, but I think it what was so fascinating talking to
you. You were going someplace to feed somebody, didn't you?
I know, you know. Great, it's a buffet. We're going to go to Gramercy Tavern right down there in Midtown. What is this? Oh, shit. Autocratic. What security do we need? They're spying on journalists. Oh, dear God. You know what? A big takeaway was, you know, I was talking to folks who it's called a illiberal democracy right now. And so democratic norms that they had a decade ago have certainly been chipped away. And, you know, it's not a surprise as to how they did it. And they can control the media. They peel away certain voting rights. And suddenly, you know, because they can control some of the narratives, they can control some of the districts with which people vote, the way in which people vote, they start taking rights away. They start kicking out campuses of higher education in the center of town, throwing that outside of Hungary. Hard line against immigration and taking away rights from the LGBTQ community. Right. And you talk to people there and they're like, it happened so you almost didn't notice it happening. And then it's gone like that. And and I do think when we came back here talking to Americans, I think there's a lot of people who look at what's happening right now and are like, yeah, it's always been wild. I have this fight with Governor Kasich a lot too, of like, I know it ebbs and flows. It always does. And America always thinks it's on the brink of something, but our institutions are strong is often what we think. But I think we see day in and day out, our institutions aren't as strong as we think they are. And I do think there are real threats and there are changes that happen day in and day out that can take away these democratic norms that we've taken for granted for so long. And you look globally at what is the big thing that has shifted. And I do go back towards it's our technology and it's our media. And I don't, it's affecting our discourse in a way that bad actors can flood the system or they can limit the system. I think that's the one difference in Hungary. I think Hungary is more like 1984 where they limit the information people get and they still can vote, but you're just not seeing or hearing from the other people.
Right.
And I think in America, it's a brave new world and it's what we do is we give you too much. Right. And so it's not that the information isn't there. It's just, you are so inundated by it and you're so confused by it that you don't care. And I think that's where when you have any kind of societies like that, and you have some bad actors in position of powers who can start to rewrite the rules to benefit them, you can be in a dangerous place if you're not checking that consistently. And so Hungary is a real harbinger for what could happen in America, and I hope we keep an eye.
Jordan Klepper, as I said from the beginning, folks, I was so looking forward to this conversation. I am a huge fan and admirer of your work. Someone in the political space, it's really intriguing and fun to watch someone sort of peel the curtains back and show us who we are in many respects, and to do it with humor, to do it in a way that is not offensive but rather engaging. It's great political work, and so I applaud you for that and thank you for taking the time to hang out here in the neighborhood with the brother. And you know, I look forward to the next time, man. Just one real quick, just before I let you go, there's an election coming up.
Is there?
I heard in November. How do you, from your feel and your vibe walking around the community, how do you see voters responding this fall?
You know, it's the one thing I'm not good at is overall context. So how it will all fall out, I see a lot of passion in different places. I think the the Trump world has gone deeper, faster than I thought it would, but I think it's a little bit smaller than it was.
Right.
I mean, I see the biggest thing that could happen for Democrats has already happened, in that Trump has injected himself into this and Roe v. Wade in a way that I'm like, if there's one thing I think Democrats know how to run against, it's Donald Trump. I don't know if they know how to do anything else.
Right.
So I think that was like the biggest gift for the midterms, or perhaps the biggest gift for what's coming up, is that is something that will get people out, and that is something that people are scared of. And so I don't know. I think there's senses of optimism for Democrats in the midterms. I don't know. I think, again, it sounds like I'm not going to put my faith in any kind of institution or any type of guess as to who's going to pull that thing out. But I do think there's been, I think people are really feeling the importance of all of these elections right now in a way that you traditionally wouldn't see in a midterm. And so I think you're going to see a lot of people turn out, and we'll see.
I think that's actually the important point, that people see themselves now wanting to be a part of this in November, whereas that was not the case 6 months ago. Even among the energy on the MAGA side, there was sort of a expectation that it was all going to turn out their way. So yeah, they were still rah-rah, and when polled, you know, they showed that in the numbers, but on the ground, it was something very, very different. And so I think now even that's begun to turn around because of the backlash to their positions on abortion, the economy getting better for people, even though, again, I keep telling people inflation is not a forward indicator. It is a looking backwards. But, you know, still people are processing a lot of this. Mm-hmm. But at the end of it, they're saying to themselves, yeah, I think I want to vote. And that's important. So y'all get your ass out and vote. I don't care. I don't care who you're voting for, but you got to participate, because otherwise I don't want to hear you bitching later on. Jordan Klepper, thank you again so much. Follow him on Twitter at Jordan Klepper. Check out his work, obviously, on The Daily Show, on the Comedy Channel, on Comedy Central, and certainly the podcast with John Kasich and Klepper. And I'm looking forward to Fingers the Conspiracy. Certainly looking forward to that one. That's good. That sounds juicy to me.
It's gonna be fun.
It has a whole lot of connotations that are very exciting. So
I think it'll be good. There's content. If you're a podcast listener, which I'm guessing you are, listening right now, we're going to go to some fun places for sure.
All right. Well, that does it for this time together, folks. You know, it's always a blessing when you drop in for a chat with me and my friends. And don't forget to check us out and do that podcast thing that we all love when you download. That's what it's all about. Do the download, Spotify, tune in, whatever. You know where to find me. And also check me out on Twitter at Michael Steele. And the podcast has its own little Twitter space. It's an amazing thing, at Steele_podcast. Until next time, be blessed, be well. Fall is here, baby. Winter is coming. That's a whole nother conversation that we can get into later. See ya.